Well, thanks so much for joining us here on Cranford Radio, which is also today Transportation Radio. We are interviewing someone from Cranford. It is Chris Feintel. He is the Assistant Commissioner of Operations for the New Jersey Department of Transportation, a graduate of CHS. Chris, welcome to Cranford Radio.
Thank you for having me, and good morning.
You've got a couple of things that we want to talk about, but Sure. Let's first get a little bit of a sense of what your job is. I mentioned the title, Assistant Commissioner of Operations for New Jersey Department of Transportation. What does that mean?
So I guess to give you the background, the quick DOT elevator speech I would say is, you know, we have two very large business units within our department. So there's the capital program side, you know, the other folks that are doing dynamic stuff, building new bridges, they're paving long stretches of roadway, fixing infrastructure, maybe upgrading infrastructure, I guess a better way to frame it. And then there's the operations team. So we're about 1,500 strong. We're the folks that you see out on the roadway really every day, whether we're working on some vegetation control, doing aesthetics. We're charged with a lot of the safety devices and all of the signalized traffic, you know, intersections. So all of our traffic signals, all of our highway lighting. We also are really in charge with being first responders to any sort of highway incidents. So we partner closely with state police, and we're out there from an emergency management perspective, taking care of all of that. So we are really like the loud and proud, first group to get out there. We assess. And then I guess additionally, you know, I spoke of the capital side. Once they hand projects over to us, we're charged with keeping the infrastructure alive, you know, whether that's 10 years for some pavement or 100 years for a bridge structure. We're charged with maintaining and keeping everything in good order.
Now, a little bit of transportation trivia for Sure. People in Cranford. The shortest state highway in the state of New Jersey is partially in Cranford, New Jersey Route 59, which runs between South and North Avenues. A lot of folks may not know that, although yeah. I have seen it published around from time to time.
It's a hidden gem. And one of the reasons, it's obviously not a route that comes up very often in my purview, but we recently changed the way that we sweep the state. So we were under an administrative order, you know, of kind of what street sweeping looked like in the state of New Jersey, and we partnered closely with DEP for it. We're now based on traffic count. There's different delineations based on the traffic will be the frequency of the sweeping. So Route 59 is, I would say, one of the least traveled roads in the state of New Jersey when it comes to traffic count. So it did actually come up very recently in a meeting, which is interesting.
Well, I also want to talk about your Cranford background. As I mentioned, you graduated from Cranford High School, the class of 1999. I believe you grew up in Cranford. Tell me about your growing up years in Cranford.
I did. So I'm a product of the school system. I went to Brookside Elementary, then to Orange Avenue, then to the high school. It was really a great place to grow up. You know, my sister and I had a phenomenal experience there through the school system. Town activities, I just have such fond memories of going downtown, you know, into the different stores, the walkability of it. Really a fantastic place. And then whenever I go back now, I'm amazed at the continued growth of the downtown area of Cranford, and it really appears to be thriving, which is exciting.
When you were a student at Cranford High, were you involved with some of the extracurricular activities?
I was. I was very active with the student government. So that was a something, you know, kind of you don't know it at the time, but probably was influencing where I would go with my career, what my interests were. And I always gravitated towards those type of classes, you know, whether it was the geography or just kind of learning about different social studies and things of governmental studies. So it's just great kind of looking back, something that was purely an interest in those formative years has kind of helped lead me to a career in government without being a politician. So like, you know, like it's, you know, I feel like as a kid, you're thinking, well, I like government, but I don't want to ever run for an office. And you don't realize there's so many different avenues you can go and make an impact for the people, which is great.
Well, obviously you talked about being involved with student government, but I see career-wise that you also were involved with swimming and working with the YMCA, and then moved into transportation. That sounds like a bit of an unusual pathway to transportation. Tell me about that.
It was, and I'm going to give both swimming and the YMCA some credit for it. So I was a swimmer my whole kind of life through Cranford, and then I went on to Bucknell University, and I was the captain of the swim team there and had a lot of success, and it was really a great experience. like most maybe former athletes, you get into some coaching afterwards, and you try to kind of figure out what's life going to look like in those years in your early 20s. So the Y offered me a lot of opportunities there to stay connected to swimming, but also learn a lot about facilities management and learn about kind of the running a small business and what does that look like. And the Y does a tremendous job with impacting communities and also running a really successful nonprofit. So I got to learn a little bit of both in those regards. The Y's in New Jersey, I'd say more than the rest of the country, really are ingrained in a lot of the towns that they serve. So that was excellent for me to kind of see that and see a lot of the impact there. And then, believe it or not, as I moved up through the Y, I kind of went from, like most businesses, if you want to move up, you got to kind of move around. So I was out in Hunterdon County. I was down in Burlington and Camden counties. And then through maybe some happenstance, I got connected with a former teammate of mine, Kurt McCoy, who's one of the top engineers in the state now with the DOT. And we just got to talking. There were some opportunities to make a career change to come over. And it really was maybe the best decision I ever made. It felt like a leap of faith at the time, but it really did work out.
So obviously you don't start out as the Assistant Commissioner of Operations. Tell me about what you've done at NJDOT. Has it been in the operations area
It
primarily?
has been. I was entered into Central Region. So DOT's broken up into three regions, North, Central, South. I know that's like a hot topic here. At least from our perspective, there is a Central Jersey. Even within our walls, we'll argue about what the borders of Central Jersey should be. But I was working in Central Region, primarily charged with snow and ice control. So kind of organizing our fleet and our team for snowstorms and for any sort of weather event. I could go on a whole thing. Maybe we'll get into it. I've seen a huge shift in New Jersey with less snow, but believe it or not, more weather events, things that I would call as far as the transportation impact. We're starting to see a lot more of that through there. Like any business, if you get in and you get connected, maybe some doors open if you continue to work hard. And I've been very blessed in that regard. So I was with Central Region, was able to move up a little bit there. And then I had the opportunity to start working statewide. It's been exciting. It's been stressful. It's been really everything. We feel like a small state, but when things are going on in both Sussex and Cape May counties, and all of a sudden it's like it feels like a huge state as far as what can go wrong and as far as the traveling up and down the state. But it's exposed me to a lot of really neat things. I love New Jersey, and more that I've gotten to know the entire state of New Jersey, I love it even more because I think we do offer a little bit of everything here.
Well, since you mentioned about Central Jersey, I have to ask, in New Jersey DOT, does Cranford fall in the central
Oh, north,
section?
believe it or not. It's
Oh.
considered Union County is north, which I would then debate. I would say, as someone who's now a Hunterdon County resident, Hunterdon doesn't consider itself central, but DOT does. So interesting.
Let me ask you also, with your job, New Jersey DOT's headquarters is in Ewing. But they have a statewide traffic management operations center in Woodbridge in the old New Jersey Highway Authority building. It's Garden State Parkway and Route 9. Are you primarily working out of Ewing, or are you in Woodbridge, or a little bit of everywhere?
Little bit of everywhere. Believe it or not, Bernie, we have 99 facilities sprinkled across the state. Most are very well hidden, and I think that was by design. So we're not just dropped into a neighborhood. We're hidden. We're hidden throughout the state. So I have opportunities. I'm very mobile, and that's the beauty of 2024 is we have both vehicles and we have the technology to work anywhere. I'm based out of the Ewing headquarters, but I have the ability to go anywhere. Recently, I was just at our CDU dispatch, working with CDU in Hamilton. We have a headquarter in Cherry Hill. We have one up in Mount Arlington for North. So we're a little bit of everywhere.
With operations, myself having worked in transportation operations, I know that when something goes wrong, that's where things usually take place. It's not a 9 to 5 type job. Tell me about some of the things that you've been involved with. One of the ones that comes to mind that I know you were involved with was the remnants of Hurricane Ida when they moved through New Jersey. Cranford was hard hit, as was many areas of the
Sure.
state. Tell me what involvement NJDOT had during a storm like that and in its aftermath.
Well, I'm going to go back to one thing, and I'm so glad you said it, Bernie. My staff, if they listen to this, and I hope they will, they're going to chuckle at what you said because I often will reference that 9 to 5 is the least important time in operations. So, like 2 in the afternoon on a Tuesday, it's awfully quiet around here, but it's it can get very busy at any given moment. Tropical Storm Ida, I was unique to us in the sense of, we have a really dynamic and a great way that we approach these weather events. In a lot of ways, snow and ice is predictable. We get a forecast, we know what's going to come in. I generally know how many trucks I'm going to have based on the rate of snow. I know how long it's going to take us to clear. So we can set expectations to both the governor's office, the community. We have a great communications team, so they'll put things out, and we try to do public awareness for that. Tropical Storm Ida, and I still have never gotten a great answer for it, but it hit Louisiana incredibly hard. It was a strong storm, but it wasn't this raging hurricane as it went through the rest of the country. And then something happened when it hit Pennsylvania, and it clearly picked up a lot of steam, a lot of precipitation, and we started to have, there was locations that I think got 6 to 8 inches of rain in 1 hour. It was like nothing I've ever seen, that's for sure. That was an intense night, and then I guess an intense few months afterwards. Something people tend to forget about is Ida started with a confirmed tornado down in Gloucester County. So our attention quickly went to this tornado, and we're getting reports of some significant and severe damage down in Gloucester County. And next thing we're getting calls really everywhere of flooding. Where flooding gets very difficult for me is it's unlike snow. I can't just send out trucks to go push the water out of the way. Mobility really stopped in New Jersey there for a stretch there that evening, which is our absolute worst case scenario. And that's kind of our nightmare because it's like we feel like we're a little helpless even in that moment. The amount of water and I guess the amount of road closures was like something like I've never seen. Really kind of came across the state. Hunterdon, Somerset, Middlesex, Union counties were hit very hard. And then that next morning, or not even the next morning, I live in Hunterdon County. It was very difficult for me to kind of move throughout the state while the storm was there. Things started to recede. I would describe it almost like an apocalypse movie, in a sense of there were cars everywhere burning. But there weren't people. There were cars facing all different directions. I had a couple moments where I was like, I don't even know if I should be driving around here because it's just so bizarre to see cars on state roads that are abandoned and facing sideways and moving everywhere. Our infrastructure is designed typically for about 2 inches of rain an hour. To get 6 to 8 in 1 hour, it just overran the system, and so I think at first, ROEs, we're looking for, was there damage? Was there a failure in the infrastructure? The reality is we saw a storm that the state of New Jersey, maybe just wasn't built for.
Talking about another type of weather, a little bit more routine, snow.
Sure.
We've had our first couple of snowstorms. They weren't too bad in Cranford this past year. The previous two winters were relatively snow-free. But of course, what we have to keep in mind is what we're getting in Cranford doesn't necessarily reflect what's going on elsewhere in the state. Up
Sure.
in Sussex County, it might be a much different picture. What goes on during a snowstorm at NJDOT?
We take snow very seriously. I'm proud of, I think we handle our snow and ice events really well. I mentioned the three regions. Within the three regions, there are sub-regions that are loosely county-based, but they're based on traditional weather patterns. To your point, N1 is that Sussex and Warren County area. They get the most action every year, as you'd imagine, highest elevation. Things kind of come over the Poconos and they clip Sussex and Warren counties. What I can tell you is historically, we have averaged about 50 weather events a year. That's going back for the past 30 years, if you do a look back. The past few winters, we've been lighter than that. Right now, we're on event 31 we just had recently. Now, we'll name or number anything that we think would have some sort of pavement impact. So most folks don't realize it, even my friends and family, but what do you mean you're working snow tonight? What do you like? We're not aware of anything. I'm like, yeah, well, if it's 35 degrees and raining, I'm much more concerned than the general public would be on something like that, just because there's a risk that we might have to put down some material and apply that to the pavement. We have levels of activation. We're very organized in that. We go from a level one to a level five. A level one is very much we're monitoring. I like to tell everybody it's We've received information that something may happen, but we don't really think anything will happen. That would be our level one. But we're putting a very minor amount of staffing and folks into the StimC and into our emergency operations centers just to monitor, so we're not caught flat-footed on anything. Well, then it goes all the way up to a level five, which would be like a state of emergency, shelter in place, blockbuster blizzard, which thankfully we haven't had any of those recently. That's kind of the key, I would say, that shift. It used to be tried and true about 50 storms a year or 50 named weather events. And within that, probably about 8 to 10 storms where we'd be plowing. We just haven't had nearly as much plowable snow. The reality for me is that 6 to 8 inch snowstorm that's very predictable, that's our home run. That's like our sweet spot, and that's the easiest storm for us. We know what we have to do. You push the snow out of the way. A couple hours later, it's like it never happened. 34 degrees, and is it going to rain? Is it going to snow? It's like on the razor's edge. Those are the nights where I'm very worried.
And I guess it's the unexpected that really present the biggest challenges. We talked about Ida, which dumped far more rain than I think most people were expecting. I think back to a storm. I'm not even sure exactly when it was. It was November, I want to say 2019, I'm not sure, where there
November
was a
15th.
snowstorm.
Yep, I know it
Okay.
well. Yes.
And I happened to be in Newark that afternoon. Having worked in transportation, I've heard the word gridlock many times. It's the first time I've ever really seen gridlock. It
Correct.
wasn't a terribly heavy snow, but like I say, it was unexpected. And it fell just as kids were getting out of school, people were
Correct.
getting out of work, and it took me probably about 4 hours to go from Newark to Cranford.
Yeah.
Something like that that comes up, what goes on? Because the plows couldn't get out, the trucks to treat the roadways, nobody could move.
Right. That event, well, a couple things I could go for hours on that one event of some of the breakdowns there, frankly, and some of the things we've done to correct it since. But the bookends of the snow season, so November and now that we're into March, I have always found that the forecasts are much more unpredictable. Maybe we put a little less trust in them. My forecasting partners don't like to hear me say that, but it's just kind of the reality of the fluctuation of the temperatures. Things are a little more unpredictable in November and in March, a little bit in April as well. I'm sure you've heard the messaging since, and we really hammer it home to kind of stay home and stay out of the way of the plows so the plows can do what they do. That day, and we were in it, and we had all of our equipment out, but the reality was exactly as you said. Schools let out, businesses let out, the world kind of let out at the worst time and the most intense part of the storm. I think the saying our comms always said is clear the roads so we can clear the roads. And it was gridlock. Even around the Capitol area, I was in Ewing that day. We were fighting hard to get 29 reopened or out of that gridlock situation, but every side street was so bad you couldn't turn off a 29 Route 29 to even go into those neighborhoods. So it was a tough day. We learned a lot of lessons from it. We're always very proactive, but I think now with these November storms, even a couple of years ago we had that Halloween storm. When it's early season, we go maybe a little more aggressive than we would in the past, just knowing that there could be really that unpredictability.
It's kind of like spring training for drivers because they have forgotten how to drive in snow and
Yeah.
ice. And that first storm of the year, whenever it falls, is like, okay, let's see if we can remember how to do this.
Sure. And if hindsight's always 2020, but if the world waited and if schools let out at a regular school time, like I think things would have worked out. But everybody saw, and it was snowing at a pretty incredible rate and much more intense than anybody predicted. So I understood the reaction to that, but it just maybe wasn't the right strategy.
Since we're talking about weather, let me ask you about a longer range issue, climate change. New Jersey obviously is a coastal state, perhaps one of the most vulnerable state highways, Route 36 going through Seabright, for example,
Sure.
where you've got the river on one side and the ocean on the other side. How is New Jersey DOT dealing with climate change and how that's going to affect the transportation infrastructure?
Sure. We have an entire unit dedicated to resiliency and to the hardening of New Jersey. To your exact point, Bernie, I keep going back to, we have the 50 weather events a year. When I first got here, which isn't that long ago, I've been doing this for 8 years. We'd maybe have one flooding event. Like, the winter would start on event one or two. We now are, I'm starting at the winter at event seven, eight. We're having six or seven flooding events every summer. It's a stark change. Yeah, I may want to make light of it, but I don't feel like we have like regular rain anymore. Everything's very intense as it comes through the state. There are impacts for that. I can also speak from the operations side. We put out about $350 million of maintenance contracts a year. So, we work with contracted partners that help us do A from in-kind repair, but just some minor engineering and minor upgrades. We're dedicating quadruple the amount of money that we have in the past, and we're really kind of moving things away from some areas and dedicating them to our drainage efforts, upgrading piping, upgrading pipe sizes. In the 70s and 80s, there was a big push to put in corrugated metal pipe that's now all hit the end of its life cycle. So on the maintenance side, we know that it all has to come out and to put better and newer materials in there. So we're making a concerted and a very large effort to invest into the drainage systems in New Jersey. I hope it really kind of comes to fruition and we see benefits of that. Where I will say is we have, after all of the just the destruction of Route 35 after Superstorm Sandy, the drainage down there was upgraded significantly. And knock on wood, we don't have the same issues on 35 that we have on 36. So, with some smart engineers and some upgrades, it really can be done.
Another type of event that you have to deal with is a big special event.
Sure.
Perhaps one of the biggest that's on the horizon right now is the World Cup that's going to have its final at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford. What involvement do you have for those kinds of events?
So I'm the DOT lead for the FIFA effort, which is very exciting for me and for our team, and I'm proud of that. When the governor's office was part of the courting stage, I'll call it for FIFA, we came up with a playbook, and we call it the Taylor Swift playbook because we tested it when she did her series of concerts up at MetLife, where we proactively staffed out with our SSP, our safety service patrol. And we had a couple maintenance folks up there, like for the just in case anything comes up. State police also partnered with us there to help with crowd control in and around the stadium. We picked Taylor Swift because Philadelphia, I don't want to say struggled, but an unintended consequence of the Philadelphia events were folks without tickets were showing up and they were literally stopping on the highway just to try to hear the songs coming out of the stadium. And it caused obvious issues there. So we put that in play for Taylor Swift. We ended up doing it for Ed Sheeran. We've adjusted it a little bit for all the Jets and Giants games up there. And I'm proud that we had some data and some strong metrics that mobility in and around the stadium during the events was actually better than during a normal commute time because of some of these mitigation efforts that we took. And if I don't know if it was a small win or not, but it helped a little bit with the FIFA sales pitch or kind of our New Jersey story for FIFA to get that final. So really exciting. Now that said, a Taylor Swift concert has about 80,000 fans at MetLife. And according to Colonel Callahan, we could expect if the right two teams are playing at MetLife, you get 200,000 people that want to be in and around that stadium, not necessarily ticket holders. The other exciting thing with it, but also the challenge of FIFA will be, my understanding is MetLife's parking lot is going to be cut by about 25% just because of the amount of international media and the amount of staging that they're going to have to set up. It's not like a Super Bowl where it's the one day huge monster event. This is a spread over 6 to 8 weeks. There's going to be some infrastructure that's built specifically for FIFA. So it's going to be a mass transit event for a lot of the ticket holders, but there's also the events all around it. And it's really a statewide thing because what's also exciting is the Red Bull Stadium's a practice facility. That's where the teams are actually going to warm up and then they get a state police escort to the stadium for the game. My understanding is Princeton is a practice facility. Princeton and Rutgers are both practice facilities. The Pingry School is a practice facility. So folks are going to be all around the state. And then the games down in Philadelphia. I believe there's going to be a fan fest at the Camden waterfront, potentially one in Atlantic City. So really, it's going to be a full statewide event that summer of 2026. Plus, it's the 250th anniversary of America, that 4th of July. So
Oh boy.
Philadelphia for sure is going to have a lot, and same with Liberty State Park. They do a huge, and a great job on the 4th of July. So it's exciting and busy summer for us for sure.
Oh, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I've been talking with Chris Feintel. He is the Assistant Commissioner of Operations for the New Jersey Department of Transportation. Chris, again, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bernie. This was great.